Welcome to the Wisdom from the Top of the World podcast, recorded at the Aspen Chapel.
Well, thank you very much, and lovely to be with you this morning. For those of you who are just coming today, you might be a little bit like, oh my God, what did I come to, you know? But yesterday we talked a lot about the Big Bang universe and evolution and the bigger picture, because sometimes we get weighed down and we get kind of boxed into the small picture. And so my work is about the big picture and the big story of our lives. I think we have the capacity for so much more. I think we have the capacity to really, really help create a whole new world. Even in the midst, as we're talking about war in the Middle East, the sorrow of war, the death, and yet, here we are after 13.8 billion years in the universe, and we're alive, to able to think about it. So this morning I want to talk about a little bit about the not yet God. You know, and we think, oh no, what does that mean? You know, the not yet God. Is it like God, like done, you know? But, you know, I don't know. Maybe we won't, because we don't want to move here. We're it's on a Sunday sleeping, so... Hello, wake up, wake up.
Talk among yourselves, and I'll quickly go and maybe put a battery.
Oh, a battery, yeah. Well, let me give you the short end. So my when we talk, oh, there we are. Nicholas, it was your magnetic presence. It's called quantum entanglement, as you were moving away. So, yeah, well, let's just start here, you know. This is a good place. Théodore Desjardins was a French Jesuit scientist who was a paleontologist and really felt that, you know, deeply devoted to Christ, but also deeply devoted to matter. You know, as a scientist, he was really intrigued by matter. And he really aimed to bring faith and science together into a single unified story. And what he realized is that there's a core energy here in the universe that no matter what happens, and a lot does happen, that this core unity keeps uniting and creating new entities onto more life. And he called that the energy of love. And he says the physical universe, now mind you, he actually said this by observing nature. This is not some poetic statement or, you know, it's not some religious statement. It's really a scientist looking how cells come together, how, you know, stars are, I mean, all the way that nature itself keeps unifying and complexifying. And he said the physical structure of the universe is love. The core reality of our lives is love. And yet here's the whole thing. This is what Théodore said. Yeah, it's crazy, it's chaotic, it's random, it seems like this is really, like, why do we get up in the morning sometimes? But he said there's a presence here. There's a deep, deep presence that, in a sense, is the presence of love energy itself. And he calls this God Omega. I feel like I'm in this presence now in this sun, you know, and this presence is like a guiding power. And it's really... You know, sometimes we learn so much, we're so complex in our theories, and sometimes I think the most, thank you, Nicholas, the simplest reality is love. Love is our deepest reality. That if we commit ourselves to love, the rest of life will, in a sense, find its place. And in a sense, that's what he's saying, that there's this presence here that is with every aspect of life, from the smallest molecule, from the quark, into the cosmos, to the human, into the mind itself. And this is what he means by God. God is the name of the absolute presence of love, the power of life itself. And so, you know, maybe next. Thank you. So he sees this love as the heart of matter. Matter, as we talked about yesterday, matter and consciousness are actually two aspects of the same reality, that there's no such thing as consciousness apart from materiality. And so matter is the matrix of consciousness, and consciousness born of matter is always advancing towards something, Consciousness is this realm of awareness that's always reaching out beyond ourselves, and yet it is within ourselves. So it's within, it's kind of connecting us to other things, and yet it's pulling us beyond. And that's what he means by this heart of matter, that we are, can we move next? So he says, he has this prayer, bless you, mighty matter. Irresistible march of evolution, reality ever newborn. You who by constantly shattering our mental categories force us to go even further and further in our pursuit of truth. Matter. Teilhard is one of the few people who sees matter as the beginning of all other aspects of life. And we have grown up, especially in the Western world, with matter being secondary to my thoughts, my abstract thinking, everything else about me. We made matter sort of like it's something we need, it's something we are. But Teilhard says everything begins with matter, with the stuff of matter itself. We are matter born into consciousness. And that's really an amazing thing. And next. So he says this matter has this power. And that's what we mean from the Christian sense of incarnation. There's like this power that's a power, an absolute power, emptying into matter itself. What we say this in the way that so the self of God is in the self-emptying of God. God becoming element and drawing everything. This power of life, this power of love, drawing everything into the fullness of being. So God is not some guy, big guy in the sky idea. You know, God is not found in opposition to matter. It's not like God and world. You know, it is that the whole world is actually the birthplace of God. That's actually the Christian message. And so the next slide. So Teilhard speaks about this birthing of God from within the whole realm of matter. This is so different from how many people have been brought up with religion. The whole Judeo-Christian tradition has this God-world relationship where God is sort of this power over the world. And Teilhard turns that upside down and says, no, God is that power that is emerging from within, yet always more than, because God is this infinite power of love. And our job is to become aware of this love. So he speaks of the Christ as this power of God united to matter, taking on a more personal form in materiality, or what he calls the third nature of Christ, the divine nature, the human nature, and the cosmic nature. Next, please. So here's where we get to the story of Jesus, and this great story for a Sunday, right? You know, Jesus. So, you know, the amazing thing is Jesus was not Catholic. I mean, you know, he wasn't even Christian. So, and people are like, what? He wasn't Catholic? His mother was Catholic, right? No. So Jesus comes, he's Jewish, he's born into a Jewish household. You know, he was bar mitzvahed and knew the Jewish prayers. He was a simple man, actually. He was not educated. He was not a rabbi. He wasn't a trained rabbi. And yet he comes on the scene, you know, at the age of around 27 or so, and starts preaching pretty radical things like the reign of God is here. And it's like, what is this guy talking about, you know? And where does he get this, where did he get the chutzpah to talk like this, you know, basically? And so, you know, some scholars have begun to say that Jesus was, there was something different about him, right? There's something that kind of awakened in him. The Jewish boy, like people said, isn't he the son of Mary and Joseph? And they're really kind of nice people. They don't seem too crazy. So how do they have a son like this who's in the temple telling the rabbis, you know, what the, you know, things are about? So they speak about a mutation of consciousness. Really interesting. Like Jesus had, he came to just a new awareness in himself. And I use the term cyborg because we were talking about cyborgs yesterday. You know, this hybridity between, say, machine and human. Here's a hybridity between divinity and humanity. And, you know, I don't think the scriptures would have used the term Jesus was a cyborg. But it is, by the cyborg, and any time we have this kind of hybridity, it means we don't have a clearly defined, exhaustive concept of the human. And that's what Jesus is about. He destabilizes humanity. Religion is not a stabilized presence of things. It's a destabilization because this presence of this power of love is breaking in through matter and doing new things. So the incarnation destabilized sort of the reified or these kind of religious categories. Showing up as a hybrid creature, Jesus reveals the arbitrariness and the constructed nature. We create norms and then we confine ourselves to those norms. A lot of institutional religion is about normativity. Here are our canons. Here are the rules. Here's the orders. You know, pay, pray, and obey, or you're out, right? You know, if you're not going to heaven, you're going to hell type thing. And it's like, no, that's not true. So Jesus is this destabilizer. Next. And I think what we see in Jesus is just this radically breakthrough in his own consciousness. He experiences this presence of God as his life. Like the Father and I are one. And this kind of Jewish person has this intense immediacy of God's presence. And it gives him a liberated faith. That presence of God within him that he deeply experienced freed him, in a sense, to challenge the structures of his time that were oppressive, that were unjust, that were, in a sense, confining even for the Jews. And this kind of liberated self was disarming to his own Jewish brothers and sisters, to the Jewish community. And yet, I think that's what faith does. Like, this kind of deep presence of God, when we become aware of that within ourselves, we are free to see the world with new eyes and act from a new center. Next, please. So, Jesus, in a sense, represents a new person. And I think that's what, certainly from a Christian side, what we're being called, I think all people are called into newness. A disruptive ministry. He was a boundary breaker, not a boundary maker, right? He was, well, are you hungry? It's a Sabbath, but we're going to eat corn, right? And they're like, no, it's a Sabbath. You cannot eat. And he's like, but my disciples are hungry. So, were you caught in adultery? Don't worry, you know. I was telling them yesterday, like, you know, a woman caught in adultery, Jesus is like, oh, you know, wait, sin, done, over. He's like, doodling in the sand. They're like, aren't you going to punish her? He's like, well, who among you, you know, didn't do anything not so good in your life, right? Who among you? Who do you think you are? Come on, follow me, right? So that's like destabilizing. We break the boundaries. You change them. And that's what he does. He lives from this new center of non-dual consciousness, an integrated center of awareness. Next, please. So he saw there was no separation between himself and all other humans. He reached out to everyone, lepers, Samaritans, women, loved people, you know. There was no distinction. Brown, yellow, white, gay, trans, single, whatever you were, Jesus was there as your partner, your friend, bringing that presence of love there. He was a whole maker. So that's one way I like to look at Jesus, as a whole maker. One who finds his presence of God within them and lives from that new center of love is one who will challenge the boundaries that prevent love from rising up in our midst. And we become creative in that love as whole makers. Next, please. So here's what I just want to bring in here is that Carl Jung, the Swiss psychiatrist, was a very novel and innovative thinker, also one who deeply read the Bible. And Jung realized, he says, religion has been a constraint for many people. It has actually held us back from the deeper levels of our reality. And he said, it put it this way, he says, the many gods become one, the one God becomes human, and every human is to become God. Religion, he says, is a natural process of individuation. Not a special process, but part and parcel of our own growth and development as human persons. And he says individuation is integral to God's own becoming. And I guess, next slide, I guess that's the thing, is that we have had sort of a religion of a fixed God who is absolute divine being with a power over us that we must adhere to. But in fact, the Christian God is not that. The Christian God actually has destabilized the Jewish God by turning that God upside down and saying, no, this God is now being born from within. And so Jung thought that religion, as most of the Western world knew it, has ended. And it's true. Religion really does not motivate us in a way that empowers us towards greater unity and justice. It has become a source of division and war and violence. So he proposed that we move from an ego toward the self as a stabilizing center personality towards a self that is kind of rerouted in its deeper self, in its deeper God self. Next slide. So he says God needs humankind to become whole and complete. That is so radical for us because we're pretty sure God is whole and complete and we're not whole and complete and we need God. And what Jung and Teilhard de Chardin said is, no, God needs us to really fully be God. In other words, if God is love, God is the capacity for love, but love has to be actualized. It has to be embodied. It has to be lived out. That's the only way that a God of love can become alive. So Jung says it's only when we come to that deeper consciousness within ourselves that God becomes alive as part of ourselves. And he says, you know, God and humanity are in an entangled state. Each needs the other, and that's the Christian message. That is what the Christ is about. God needs us to really grow into the fullness of God as love, and we need that power of life, God, to be fully what we are. Next. So he calls this theogenesis. God, and he thought that this is the redemptive process of history itself. In other words, what he's saying is we continue to spiral in violence. We continue to spiral in opposition because we have not really come into the deepest religious reality of our own lives, the godness of our lives. And he says, God and human are to be united in human consciousness as the depth meaning of history, both personal and collective. So it's not that just that God saves us, but we save God from being irrelevant, from being just obsolete. It's a co-redemption of divine and human in one single and historical process. So, it's kind of amazing because, next slide, please, because I think we don't give ourselves enough credit. Christianity, I'm going to speak from Christianity because I'm Catholic, and, I think for so long it has kept us boxed in and dependent on institution. And I think that institution has, been in such a way that it doesn't want us to be empowered because the empowered human person is free and the free human person lives at a different center. And I think, but that's the whole thing. How can we become truly human, empowered in the deepest reality of our lives and live together in greater harmony, in greater unity if we live out of the center of love? It's not a power of domination over. We know those powers are brutal, right? Powers over another are brutal powers, oppressive powers. Powers of love are unified powers. They are powers of shared life, powers of relationship, powers of community, powers of selflessness, the willing to be there for another. So Christ as symbol of the self. And what Jung basically said is Jesus does not save us. We have to save ourselves by tapping into that deepest power of love within us. Next, please. So he says Christ, Jesus Christ is the symbol of what we have, what we're about, the symbol of the self, the psychic totality. And what Jung says is that if we do not do the hard work of entering into those deeper levels of consciousness, then we will be forced to live out an unreconciled self outside. So he calls this, next slide, he calls this a process of individuation. Our ego, our persona, is always this outward expression of what we are, but there's a deeper self. You know, he goes to these levels of consciousness, to personal unconsciousness, to the collective unconsciousness. We have within us a wellspring. Each one of us is tapped into the wellspring of the collective unconsciousness, the infinite potential to become whatever, in a sense, we seek to actualize. And that's why I think we live too small, quite honestly. I think what religion has never been about this kind of obedience and keeping, you know, just saving yourself so you'd make it through this world and just hope you get to a better one on the flip side of death, you know. It's about empowerment of all matter. The whole universe, as we said yesterday, is resting now on us for a more vibrant future. And so reconciling this ego with the deeper levels of ourself is the work of individuation for Jung. So next self, slide. He calls this the psyche, this level of unconsciousness, as in a sense, this place of where we can begin to realize what we are. Next, please. So religion, therefore, is this natural process of coming home to our true being, our true self. That's really what religion is meant to be. And I think so much religion has taken our minds out of the world. Lynn White once said that we have an ecological problem because we were trained to think otherworldly, spirituality over matter, heaven over earth, spirit over body. And so the whole idea was, don't think about the body, don't think about the self, think about God up above, think about heaven up above. And so we lost touch with our material roots. And therefore, actually, I think Christianity became un-Christian, basically. You know, it became this kind of abstract religion of doctrines and concepts and creeds and a lot of wordiness, you know, big words like consubstantiality, like that's a good one for you, right? Or homoousian. Oh yeah, I wake up every morning thinking about homoousius. You know, so what Jung is saying is that our relationship to divinity lies in our relationship to the unconscious, to the cosmic plenum as the ground of matter itself, consciousness and meaning. Next slide. So individuation, this process of becoming a person. So we talked a little bit about yesterday. We are becoming persons. We are not fully person. Persons are fully relational, fully alive in that conscious awareness of being one with the wholeness of who we are within ourselves, among ourselves, with the whole earth. What Jung said, if we do not do this inner work of reconciliation, which means coming to the truth of ourselves, the darkness within us, the anger, the judgments, the biases, the hurts, everything that we have stored up within ourselves, and we do store them, we have locked spaces in our hearts that we don't let anyone in there, even the people we love most sometimes, we do not let them in. And if we don't reconcile that within ourselves, Jung says we will remain divided. We remain partially divided. And what is divided within becomes conscious, becomes then, in a sense, what's acted without. Partial selves, divided selves. And he says the world then must act out the conflict and be torn into opposing halves. We have the undivided self today is the source of war. The unreconciled self, the darkness of that self, is what's being acted out in terms of war and conflict. So next slide. So he says consciousness is to be brought into unconscious darkness in this self-transformative process of individuating and becoming whole. Wholeness is our reality. And we humans, as the last species right now on this evolutionary chain, we're the least whole. You know, trees are whole because they do nothing more than be a tree. Flowers are whole because they live in that depth of their own beingness. They're wholly alive, they're wholly radiant. But humans with complex brains and hearts stuffed up with all sorts of stuff, we're like balls of yarn, you know, all kind of twisted up. And the thing is, how do we unravel that yarn? We begin to enter within, where that fullness of God's love, that divine presence that's at the heart of the world, is at the heart of our life. And we are to reconcile ourselves with that presence of love to become whole and become a whole maker. And that means a whole maker in love is willing to act freely, to challenge things, to challenge boundaries, to stand up, you know, to say, no, I say things in a different way. It's not to be violent about it. It's not to be oppositional about it. It is to walk to the beat of a different drummer. That's a creator, like any of you who are creative, you know. By creating, you bring into being that which has never existed before. And that's what's so fascinating about art and sculpture. They bring into being something that has never existed, and we are drawn out of ourselves. Art and performativity is transcendent. We're drawn out of ourselves by a new reality, by that very moment of creativity. And we bring that to a new world, and we can create then a new world. Next, please. So we say, basically, okay, this is kind of a repeat, that we're in an entangled state with God, that God needs us and we need God. Next, please. So here's the thing. How will we be, what is the salvation thing about? And I think, you know, traditional Christianity would say, Jesus kind of saved me, you know. I remember once getting on a plane in a long habit, and this woman said, oh, thank God you're here. Now we won't go down. And I'm like, oh, my God. This is really scary. I'm pretty sure we're going to go down now, you know. So salvation comes from the Latin salvare, healing. In the early church, Jesus was known as the physician. Physician, heal thyself, to be healed. To be healed what? Of darkness, to be healed of the wounds within us, to be healed of everything that causes us pain, where we have caused others pain, and that healing is what helps us make us whole, right? Healing and wholeness go together. So Christ symbolizes that for us. Christ shows us what healing and wholeness can look like, what reconciling that darkness of evil with the light of the radiant light of truth, truth being the fecundity of life, coming together so that the inner life and the outer life are in a seamless flow of light itself. So, you know, without the integration of the evil within us, that disorderedness, there is no totality. And I just think we're in a world of disordered love, you know, scattered love. Next, please. So all of this, this process of wholeness, you know, this process of salvation is death all along the way. Yesterday we were talking a little bit about death. But I think sometimes we have in our modern culture death anxiety and a rejection of death. We were talking about artificial intelligence and the way some AI people want to download our brains. If you've ever seen the movie Transcendence, you know, we can live on forever in our new mind files and our new mind clones. But death is part and parcel of life. Death is not the opposite of life. Death is actually crossing the threshold into more life. So each of us, each of our lives, is part of a larger wholeness of life. We're not the end of life. We're part of the flow of life. And death is part of that flow. And it's like little death. Sometimes just forgiveness is a type of death. Like you really don't want to forgive, but if you don't forgive, you're not going to be able to move on. So you do have to just let go and let flow. Let go and live into a new future. And that's what I think in the early church, you know, the early Christians were so convinced by a deep faith that Jesus was raised from the dead, that humanity now lives with God in a new transformed way. They were willing to live themselves to face the lions in the Colosseum, you know, to go to be martyred. They faced martyrdom. And while we're not, you know, martyrdom may not come to us this day, but sometimes just, you know, we have a hard time just with the little stuff, you know, just saying, I'm sorry, you know, I really didn't mean to hurt you. I didn't really mean to say it that way. You know, and just in that, those little things that sometimes seem small, but they get festered and they grow like wounds, and those wounds begin to crater and our lives begin to drift apart. And that's what we mean by death and resurrection. We have the capacity for more life at every single breath of life. We can die into new life all along the way because we're part of nature, and nature has been doing that for 4.6 billion years on this earth. We're here because all of nature, the costliness of life, small creatures, giant dinosaurs, you know, large mammals, large extinctions, and yet life seeks more life. That is our reality. And that's what God is about. God is that power of life at the heart of life. So, next slide. So, all of this, what Teilhard said, as well as Carl Jung, he says, we cannot be saved except through the universe and as a continuation of the universe. Isn't that beautiful? We're not going to be saved like in some special, like, swept up. We are part of the whole. That whole is the cosmos. That whole of the cosmos is Omega, the divine plenum of love, in a sense, empowering life unto more love, into the fullness of love. I think the next slide says something similar. Teilhard says, we will be saved by an option that has chosen the whole. And I guess that's our prayer this day, you know? Can we choose the whole? And that means the whole, what does that whole mean for each of us? I guess everyone will have to ask. What does it mean for me to be whole? What does it mean for me to be wholly one within myself, with those I live, with those I love, with my family, my community? What does it mean to be a whole maker? Am I a whole maker? Am I a whole maker? As I am made whole, I help make whole as well. And that, you know, sometimes it's going to be costly. Costly love. But sin is the resistance to whole making. Sin is the resistance to be part of something larger than myself. It's like, no, that's just, you know, that's just stupid stuff. I'm not going down that road. You know, I'm just going to stay in my room. I'm going to be behind my computer. I'm just going to Google what I like. You know, I'm going to just be me. You know, be me. And what is you? You know, what are you? That's the whole question, right? So I think, you know, what we're seeing here is, first of all, I think religion needs to be reborn. That's what Teilhard said. It needs to be reborn, rebirth. It's the energy for life itself. It's the connectivity of life itself. God is that power of life. We are to be, in a sense, entangled with that life. We are to be willing to give ourselves to life. You know, not just saving our little lives, which is what we're about. I just save my little life and make sure no one, you know, really, I'm worried about getting sick, I'm worried about getting old, I'm worried about losing my house, I'm worried about losing my car, I'm worried about losing my clothes, I'm worried about losing my computer. And so what if you lost all those things? Have you loved to the best that you could? Because in the evening of life, when it's all done, the only thing that will remain was how well you loved. That's the only thing that will remain. Because love is relational. Love makes whole. And we live on in those we love, in how we love. That love is our footprint for all eternity. So don't worry. Yeah, life happens, right? But religion is having faith in God, faith in the world, faith in one another, faith in the future. Do we believe that we can create a new future together? And the question is, together. Are we together? What holds us together? And it has to be the future. It has to be the fact that we will go into this future together as one single planetary community of life, or we will not go into that future at all. So choose love. We will be saved by the power of love. Amen.
So we're going to do a couple of things. As this is a church, we have to keep the lights on. We're going to just have a little offertory now. We haven't got any music or anything, so we're going to do it in silence. So if you'd like to make a contribution to the church, you just come up and put something in the giving plate there. If you're watching online, please feel free just to click that donate button. And then when we've done that, we're just going to have an opportunity for some questions for Cynthia, if anybody would like to do that. So I'm just going to give us a couple of minutes just to do that now. Well, I'm going to start.
Sure.
And
please.
I mean, I think this whole move towards wholeness, I mean, it is so obvious, you know, that we need to solve each other's problems, that we need to see the bigger picture and to think, how do we look after our world? And yet, it's also so obvious that people identify with places, with races, and want to preserve their own families, and therefore are inward looking in that. How do we get beyond that? How do we encourage individuals, nations, to start to take that picture? Is there a way that we can make that come about? How do we do that?
Yeah, I think, you know, absolutely, because, you know, we're coming out of a tribal mentality. You know, that's not a bad thing, it's just that we emerge in such ways that we have small tribal units. And, you know, in the past, if you even just look from past to present, those tribal units used to be more, they might have been neighbors, but they were self-contained. And they would only basically exchange, you know, maybe sometimes some goods or whatever, but they weren't in deep relationship. And maybe as truthfully what has changed us, I think, in our modern period is the internet. As we have consciousness shifted, precisely because the internet has raised our awareness of cultures, ethnicities, genders, the plurality of the world, the rich plurality of the world. We can go online right now and look at what's happening in the Middle East. We have deep awareness of the globe itself. So we have global consciousness in a way that we have never had in the history of the whole human species. And that is, and our challenge right now is because we have built a world on tribal consciousness, but we find ourselves now in global consciousness. And that's challenging our systems, politically, educationally, religiously, to let go of those strict boundaries of self-definition or self-identity and come into new levels of identity, complexified identity. So I do think, and unfortunately, war and opposition. Evolution, by the way, is not a seamless flow. It doesn't like, okay, here we are, you know, new reality. It's always about evolution, devolution, right? It's what we call a non-zero sum. It can break down. Wars happen. Death happens. Extinctions happen. And yet, there's a plus one. Life emerges towards something new. And we're kind of in that place right now. We can see it. The deep resistance of nation states, power, domination. We will not yield to any type of convergence. We will not yield to any type of new formation together. We do not want to be related to you at all. You're our enemy, not our brother. And actually, that won't prevail. I actually think we will. It's a lot of destruction, believe me. But we have to do our part in this as well. As yesterday I was trying to say, I don't think that there is war out there that's not here. There is war in the human heart. Even if we don't name it, we have to at least begin to recognize that all war begins within, and then it somehow seeps out. And I think if we can begin to build locally, have our own family, our own communities begin to form more and more sort of structures of deep relationality, kind of recontour who we care for, who we belong to, begin that on a local level. And I think that local level of reconfiguring community and relational life will eventually play into the larger scale of global and political life.
Anybody else like to? Yes, I'll come to Andy and then I'll come to Brennan.
How do Eastern philosophies play in with your viewpoint? I mean, because Lao Tzu wrote the 81 verses 500 years before Jesus.
And yeah, for
sure. One of them sounded very similar. Someone must risk returning injury with kindness.
Yes.
Or the world will never change. It sounds like turn the other cheek.
Yeah.
So how does that
all fit? I think there's a deep resonance, quite honestly, between, you know, so I'm going to speak from the Catholic side. People are like, we're the true deal. You know, we're the real deal. Everyone else is like a pagan. I'm like, I don't think so, you know, but it's okay. I think, get over yourselves, all right? You know, get over those dresses, you'll be okay. I think there's a deep resonance, actually. And I do think one of the things that has to come together is East and West. So what Teilhard would propose is that in evolution, it's what he called Christogenesis or cosmic personalization. That if you look at the big scale of evolution, that we are actually personalizing. In other words, as consciousness begins to complexify, we're actually reshaping our lives. And so we have a much greater exchange today between Eastern religions and Western religions. And as we enter into dialogue and conversation with each other, we go, oh, wow, we're actually pretty much saying the same thing, you know? And it's pretty richly, it's kind of beautiful in its own way. So I run a podcast called A Hunger for Wholeness. And last month or so, we had a Hindu Swami on love and evolution. And we were just so much in sync with one another on where we're going. And that's what I'm saying. Here's what I think. We're moving towards a new, what Teilhard called a new religion of the planet. It's not going to be Christian. It's not going to be Jewish. It's not going to be a Buddhist. It's going to be whatever path you can find that brings you into deep relationality and leads us into cosmic planetary consciousness, that we become one together as members of the Earth community. And so he really opted for a new planetary religion. Religions have been too, a little bit tribalized, you know, competitive, like, oh, our God's the real deal. You don't have the real God. I remember being once in a conversation with a Jew, a Muslim, and a Christian. And the Jewish guy and the Muslim like, oh, yeah, Allah, you know, this is salvation. And Jew's like, oh, no, this is salvation. And the Christian's like, oh, no, this is Jesus saves us, you know. And I'm like, okay, this is going to go nowhere, right? So it's like, look, find your path of salvation. So the end, what the end is wholeness in love. That's the end, omega. How you get there, please let it be. You know, let it be what's true to your own spirit and charism.
So John Lennon had it right.
Yes.
Brennan.
First of all, thank you. And I feel like maybe I should have stayed in bed because I think you just ruined me for the rest of my life. But I appreciate that. And I'm going to probably wander just a bit as I try to formulate this question. But I think there is rich history, human history at least, of that mystical tradition across all religions and that connection to the divine, if you will, and then the sort of reaction to that, the orthodox reaction to that, which is, oh, there's the formula, and if you don't do the formula, then, you know, you're going against the divine,
yes,
sort of a thing. And that, to me, trying to formulate just really in simple ways of how to operate in the world, and I guess for myself, I kind of boiled it down to the love, but then to the fear, right? Those are kind of the two opposing forces. And when you were talking about the fear of death and dying, I was thinking of Ernest Beckett, or Becker, if you know him, and the denial of death.
Denial of death, yeah.
And how we just build up all these facades around that fear of death, and then anytime it's, you know, you start peeling it back a little bit, there's that reaction to it. But I'm also one that believes that there's no bugs, there's only features. And so this kind of gets to my question, I guess. Why the fear? Well, how is this playing into it? And I guess maybe to how the individuation process, things like centering prayer,
yeah,
also help you along to overcome that, yes, inclination toward fear.
Yeah, great. Great question. Yeah. So, you know, I think the thing is, going back to your initial thing on mysticism versus, say, orthodoxy, and I think we've misplaced orthodoxy with orthopraxis. It's not so much I follow the rules and I will, you know, if I die, I'm going to go to heaven because I, you know, did all the right things. And that's such a, it's such a low level of consciousness, quite honestly, and so narrow, because it's all about me, you know, and my personal, I'm going to be okay. Mysticism, you're right. If you take all the world's religions, just like, I'm going to just take five, but there's so many more, and you trace them down to their roots, they all have the same mystical root. And that's the plenum. That's the fullness. We call it the mystery of God. But that mystery for me is infinite potential. The infinite potential of what we can become together. And so, you know, I don't think rules are bad, quite honestly. And that's the question. How do we live love in a guided way? How do we live love unto wholeness? And that's why I am a Christian. I'm a Catholic. You know, I'm trying to rewrite the Catholic thing, but, you know, it's okay. You have to do everything at once. And, you know, they haven't made me Pope yet, but when I become Pope, then you'll be able to figure this out better. You know, and that's the thing. Rules are helpful. We know that. We need some guidance. We need some ways to structure our lives. Otherwise, if it's left up to us, well, it's just all about me and what I think is good. But here's the thing. It's about community. It's not just about me. It's how we, and not a me, it's a we. And that's where the rules and guidance can be very helpful. How do we live this together? And honestly, as a Catholic, I actually love liturgy. It gathers all different types of people in this moment. We're gathered from different places, from different histories, from different concerns. And in this moment, here we are sharing in hope, in love, in faith. And it kind of empowers us that we are something more together than we are alone. And that goes down to your fear question, death. We're alone. We're a very lonely culture. For all our connectivity with the internet, we're all by ourselves in our room on the internet, right? And so we're the most unnatural species alive. Nature is very much at home with each other. Trees are like, cool, your little flowers, I love you, you know? Oh, look at the dirt today, how you doing? You know, so it's like nature just works together in this harmony of beingness. I'm a tree, I'm a stone, I'm a dirt, I'm a flower, but here we are all together. Humans are like, I don't like the way you think, I'm not going with you. You know, like, I don't like the way you dress or the way you look or how you smell or, you know, the way you talk. And so we keep separating ourselves out because we have the power to do that. You know, I have the agency and the will not to go. And that's what we mean by sin, fracturing. We fracture community every time we do that. And so when we are alone, our deepest fear is when we die, no one's going to know. Who's going to care? Like, well, will it even matter if I was here? I think that's the anxiety, the nothingness. Is death nothing or is it fullness? That's our question. And here from the Christian side, we're saying death is that these are limited bodies and existences, and we are oriented toward the fullness of life. Eye has not seen, ear has not heard all that God has prepared for us. And I think the fullness of life, it's an eternal life. I like cosmic fullness. I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be so dynamic. We're going to be involved in ongoing creativity. It's going to be awesome. I mean, not that I plan to die today, but, you know.
Any other questions? Yes, I'll come to Greg, and then I'll come to you after that.
Thank you so much. I sure appreciate all that you're saying. How do we get this message out? I know this chapel has been a different approach than traditional churches around here, and that was always extremely intentional, even by the founder.
Yes.
And so how do we expand that in your message and the message that we are trying to do in a much broader way? There are churches that are being sold, denominational churches being sold every day in the United States here, and it's on the way down.
Yeah.
I recall over 40 years ago listening to Elaine Pagels here.
Yeah.
introducing the Nag Hammadi, the Gospel of Thomas. And I said, this should change Christianity.
Yeah.
And she said, orthodoxy and tradition speak so loud. It would be so hard to overcome that. And I think we still are trying to do that.
I think that's true.
And your message is right on.
Yeah.
It needs to be out there.
It
will save us. How do we get it out there even more?
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. So several things. One is there's a resurgence of orthodoxy today, right? Because a return to, in the Catholic world, there's a desire for that medieval world again. You know, the Latin Mass, for example, has come back in Washington, D.C. because it gives the illusion of security, that God is in control, that God will take care of everything, and that, you know, if I just stay within the bounds of religion, I will be saved, you know? And, bad things... will not happen, and even if they do, God knows what to do. We have this idea that God knows what to do, and I think it's an unfortunate theology. That's not what God is at all. God is not even a big person, you know, which we make God into. We've anthropomorphized God. So how do we get this out there? And I think one thing is, several things. One is to speak and to share a message of love at the heart of all creation, the heart of our lives, and the need to reconcile ourselves in love in any way we can. So I run a website called the Center for Christogenesis. We have podcasts. We have videos. I'm starting another podcast with David Sloan Wilson, Science and Religion. I also think empowering the younger generations. I teach at Villanova University, and my students say, no one ever talks about God like this, you know? And they when I say they love it, in other words, it awakens us. It touches something within us, even young people. And because everyone's fearful about the future with global warming, with war. I mean, young people want to know, well, I have a future. And I think we have to keep educating, keep talking. And here, you know, I was like, put your hand to the plow. And don't look back. Just put your hand to the plow and keep plowing. It's hard work, honestly. It's not going to be a magic formula. Hard work, but I don't think orthodoxy is the way. In fact, it's actually fracturing us more. But we have to, it's not opposing. Honestly, opposing never works. The more you oppose, the deeper they become entrenched in their beliefs and their will. Love transforms because love unites. Love those who differ with us in opinion, who see the world differently, see the good, you know, try to see the good there. And amazing, I think love can do amazing things where words and logical arguments fail. So just keep at it.
Final question from Pat.
Thank you. You're a breath of fresh air. And you've partially answered this question, but public face of Christianity in this country is often mean-spirited.
I agree.
Unkind to the point of being ugly.
Yes, I agree. I know that. I mean, you know, it's been so highly politicized and hijacked and used as a force for dominant powers, for oppositional politics, that it has, I mean, people are like, I'm out of here. You know, I don't want anything to do with this Christianity thing. And that is so sad because it's actually not Christianity at all. It's just using the name Christianity for self-empowered power. And it's about power. And I think one thing we do, instead of leaving Christianity, we have to rebirth Christianity in its deeper roots. Like, there's a message here that God has become God. This power of life itself is enfleshed, enmattered in every aspect of life. That is what the Christ is about. And to begin to live that, talk about it, write about it, live it in a way that we are not only free in it, but we're empowered by it. In other words, it's not the true religion. For Teilhard, Christianity was not normative of religion. It was normative of evolution. And we're thinking in the wrong way. The question is, what are we becoming? Are we becoming it together or not? Evolution's going to happen, and then this is the thing. Religion's out here to lunch, fighting, oppositional. People are ditching it. Who cares about this stuff? But we're all looking for something, right? So who takes over? AI. It's like, okay, we can save ourselves. you know, transhumanism, posthumanism, brain downloading, cyber cryonics. So we'll be gods, but that's not what we mean here, right? So we have to reset this dial. That's what I think. And it's sort of like what Jesus, you know, kind of little mutation of consciousness there. And it begins within. It begins within ourselves. I think sometimes we know we're smart. We know the problems. We're trying to logically figure them out. But by doing that, we're taken outside ourselves. And we're trying to solve things outside ourselves. Find the world within yourself. Be at home in that world. Steep yourself in that world. Find that wellspring of love within. And you'll begin to live the world in a different way. We are the world in its formation. That's the whole point.
Well, Ilya, I'd just like to thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You know, you're talking about getting out here, your willingness to fly across the country, schlep all of these airlines and come here and be with us is just such a gift to us, to give us a completely fresh perspective. And I'm incredibly grateful for your life's work, your heart, and what you've shared with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, Ilya Delio.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
If you feel moved to make a donation to the chapel, please go to aspenchapel.org. Thank you. And if you'd like to receive these podcasts regularly, subscribe to the Aspen Chapel through Apple, Google Play, YouTube, or any other outlet.